Welcome to the Promises of the Constitution podcast.
Hello, this is Pamela Romney Openshaw coming today to talk to you about Promises of the Constitution. We're going to talk today about one of the core concepts of freedom, and that is the concept of rights and duties and how they balance with each other. What do I get and what am I expected to give and who says so? We hear a lot of yelling going on in our culture about rights. Everybody is saying it is my right to have this, my right to have that. But very interestingly, there's a real silence about what our duties are connected with the rights that we receive. In reality, these are two halves of a great whole. I always visualize a grapefruit, and you take it with a knife and you cut it directly in half, and it falls into two equal pieces. And these are your two equal pieces. One half is what you get, and the other half is what you give back again. Because there's so much confusion on the topic of rights, I think we should explain what they are. And if we go back looking for, okay, where did we arrive with this concept of rights? We end up in 1765 with a man by the name of William Blackstone, who was one of the great judges in England, who wrote a series of books called The Commentary on the Laws of England. And he really tried to get a hold on what our rights are and really draft it in terms of how they apply to law and how important they are. Now, notice that year, 1765. This is 11 years before we drafted the Declaration of Independence and 22 years before we wrote our Constitution of the United States. And so our Constitution has all of these beautiful rights built into it, but oddly enough, when they got to just days before finally concluding the writing of the Constitution, three individuals stood up in the Constitutional Convention and said, wait a minute, we can't support this document. It doesn't adequately support our rights. Those three individuals were Elbridge Gerry from Pennsylvania, George Mason, and William Randolph from Virginia. In fact, Randolph was the governor of Virginia. And they said, no, we have to have more about our rights in the Constitution. And so, realizing that this was going to be a problem going into the ratification of the Constitution, it was determined that in the future they would work to build more rights specifically in as a Bill of Rights. And so that's how we emerged at the first 10 amendments to the Bill of Rights. So why did these three individuals, Gerry, Mason, and Randolph, say that our rights were not included in the Constitution when they are so obviously there at every hand? For instance, if you get to our legislature, we have the right to select the individuals that draft our laws. We had the right to select our president. We had the right to have a Supreme Court that balanced our rights and duties to be certain that the Constitution was followed. We had the right to set rules of navigation, to set wise principles in an economy, to establish how states were going to be divided and new territories would come in. These are all rights. And yet, because others would be concerned, we drafted the Bill of Rights in the first Constitution of the United States, and there are 10 amendments to that. Amendments 9 and 10 kind of put the end finishing product on that by stating, if there's anything we missed, remember that the rights go first to the people and to the states. Those who had not more securely established rights in the Constitution of the United States had actually done so for a very real purpose. They didn't want to verbalize too clearly what those rights were, because once you verbalize something like that, it becomes much harder to attack it. However, the mood of the country demanded that we have a Bill of Rights, and in fact, we did have a Bill of Rights. So what then is in our Bill of Rights? Well, in our first 10 amendments, the very first thing mentioned in the very first amendment was our freedom of religion, because this is the key to all of our rights, all of our freedoms, is our right to worship as we please. Another one of our great freedoms is our freedom of speech, which extends into many areas. It extends into the press. We have the right as individuals to have a free press operating to tell us the pros and cons of all things that are going on in our society. This right has been severely damaged. In fact, it may have been almost completely destroyed at this point in time because so many parts of our press have become so committed to their point of view that they're no longer telling us both sides of the story. We also have freedom of speech emerging in the principle of competition, that we get to create our own world and make our own place in the world. That involves freedom of speech. We also have freedom of speech entering into the economy, which is your opportunity to earn your own way in the world, and that requires you to have the freedom of speech. Another one of our great rights is the right to assemble in groups as we choose to discuss what it is we would like to choose. We also get to meet together and sign petitions and send them into the government. We have the right to our own privacy. As individuals, those privacy rights include our persons and our homes. And as a nation, those rights are going to include not just our personal rights and our home rights, but also our national rights as well. We have the right to be secure. One of our great rights promised to us is the right of habeas corpus, which means that your body has to be brought into the court, meaning that a trial cannot be held against you with you not there, because you don't have the opportunity to protect yourself, to determine, to speak for yourself if you are not actually present in the court. You also have a right against double jeopardy. You cannot be tried twice for the same crime. The crime must be tried, the decision must be reached, and then once that decision is reached, the courts walk away from it. You also have the right to representation when you're in a court of law, someone to defend you before the opposition. And you also have the right to the public jury trial. Those 12 jurors are there as your friends. They're there to protect you. They're there to help you to determine what is really in the best interests. And there are other things that are included in the Bill of Rights. We have the right to self-government. We have the right to choose our own professions, to choose our own mates, to determine our own posterity, to improve the working conditions of our lives, and the use of the national resources that surround us in our world. And there are actually a great many individual rights that we have. They're not all of them mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but they are all of them very, very pertinent. So the next question then, of course, is going to be, where did we get our rights from? Well, our rights are known as being secure, as being inalienable, meaning that they are given to us by God. And because they are given to us by God, any individual that takes those rights from us has to answer to God for having taken those rights away from us. All free people during the history of the world have been given these beautiful, inalienable rights that come from God. And again, it is our belief in God that commits these rights to us, because it is our liberty then to exercise these rights because they come from God. If you take away God, then where would you get the rights? That's the sad part of it. If God doesn't exist, as secular humanism is so clearly taking God out of our world, then our rights are given to us by government, and government, of course, is just simply a group of individuals. And so what those individuals do is that they determine what rights you get and what rights you don't get, and that can change very easily from time to time, and you end up without universal truths, without universal law, without values that hold each one of you equally presiding in the situation where your rights are concerned. So men are not good entities for carrying out fairness among the people, because if you have two men, one on each side, each one having its own opinion, offering it against the other, then it's only the individual who has the most power that is going to get his way. He wins, and that is the definition of oppression, or very often the definition of government, once you take God out of that government. So these two individuals, these two men, are both simply organisms of nature if you take away God. And each one of them, when it comes to power, has the right to squash like a bug the other side of the issue. So if these are what our rights are, we'd better talk about our duties, because they are very important. Our duties, then, are our payment for the rights that we receive, because nothing in life is free. And so we have the responsibility to give back in order for the things that we are given. And if we're talking about our duties, what we give back, they fall really into two different categories. We have a responsibility to defend our rights, and we have a responsibility to extend those rights to others. But there are some key things that we have to know about those things. If we're going to talk about defending rights, we must have knowledge. And that knowledge must include God, because He is the source of all wise law. Our knowledge must include government. What is good government? What is bad government? How can it be misused? How can it be appropriately used? And we must have an awareness of what laws are good to pass and what laws are bad to pass. And understand that those who are attempting to take down our Constitution, those who are the enemies of liberty, very clearly understand the things that we've been talking about, but they know how to use those things to take away our liberties, not how to give them to us. In terms of defending our rights, we also must have individuals of integrity presiding in our leadership positions. And so it's very important for us to vet the candidates, to know what their positions are, to meet with them, if at all possible, to talk with them, to go on their websites, to look at the kinds of things they've done in the past, to contemplate the things we want them to do in the future, to consider what their personalities are. Will they fit well into the governing position? We vet all of those things. And then having determined those things, we go to the voting booth and we vote into office those who will do the things that we believe need to be done. However, a lot of people stop right there. In fact, they feel that if they've vetted the candidates carefully and then they vote carefully, that they've done their job. But that is only the beginning of what we must do, because we must also supervise those individuals that go into leadership positions. We have to watch what they do, and we have to give them feedback, frequent feedback. I like what you did with that. No, I don't like what you did with that. You have missed a point. Let me explain to you the part that I think that you have missed, and then you explain to me why you acted as you did. And then after we have supervised them, we must help others to do the same. And so it's very important for us to be active in our perspectives, to join in groups, to help to support the things that are good. So we work at the local level first, and then we work at the county level, at the state level, and then finally we go to the federal government. Now, the second of those rights is that we must extend those rights to others. But here is where one of the key points comes in. We do not extend to others the right to do anything that they choose to do. We can only extend those rights that will secure and stabilize our culture for the very long perspective in the future. So those things that we extend to others are only those true rights that are given to us by God, because those are the only things that will preserve our culture. So we need to provide and bring about laws that are ethical, that have a moral basis. We can say, I don't agree with what you believe, but I defend with my life your right to believe it. That does not mean I defend with my life your right to act on that behavior. Individuals still have to act in a way that preserves our culture. They must obey the laws that righteous, good, valid, stable men have enacted to perform security for our culture for the future. We expect then that all will work to provide for themselves. If society is going to work properly, it's got to work on the basis of no entitlements, because entitlements are by definition a violation of our rights and our duties. When we give something to someone, we have to have taken it away from someone else. And so entitlements then, by definition, violate our rights and, again, violate our duties. So understand that God is going to give to us what we are entitled to in terms of inalienable rights that He provides for us. And we then are expected to work for the rest through fair laws and through limited government. So finally, in conclusion to this topic of rights and duties, what is mine, what do I get, what do I need to give back, understand that you must know your place in the culture. And once you know that place, you must understand that your rights come from God, and you then perform duties to pay for the things that God has given you. Thanks so much for joining us. I encourage you to go to my book, Promises of the Constitution, available on my website, promisesofthe constitution.com. There are several sections in the book that have a lot of information that will help you. Section 1 goes into a lot of these inalienable rights. Section 7 also does the same. Many of our other materials are DVDs. The one on America's Founders, Mentors for Children will explain how individuals lived the principles that are involved in the Constitution of the United States. Join us there and come back and see us again very soon. Thanks so much. See you next time.
To have Pamela speak to your civic or church group, please call 801-373-0240 or email openshawenterprises@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to the Promises of the Constitution podcast. Be sure to go to Pam's website, promisesoftheconstitution.com, to purchase her books, DVDs, and her online educational courses available to watch on any electronic device.